I'm Paul Hardy.
And I'm Linda Hardy.
And I'm interviewing my grandma in East Fairview, North Dakota. The date is November 25th, 2018. And we are in grandma's dining room. So, grandma, can you tell me a little bit about your early childhood and your life in Latvia?
Yes, I'd like to. I was born in 1940, June 1940, and in Riga, Latvia, which was the capital at that time. I have to mention that this year, 2018, is the 100th anniversary of that little country. It was officially begun November 18th, 1918. They declared themselves independent. Of course, as it so happened, that independence was very short-lived and was already being lost by 1940 when I was born. So you might say that I was born in the war years, especially in Latvia, where that Second World War actually occurred also.
That's I didn't know that was 100 anniversary for that. That's actually really cool. So then, did you live in Riga your childhood, or is that just where you were born?
My mother grew up in Riga, but my father was a farm kid that lived, I suppose, a couple hours out of Riga. But since my mother was from there, she chose that I should be born in a hospital in Riga.
That's cool. I didn't know much about.
Well, that's it.
About that.
Those topics don't often come up.
They don't. So, you mentioned already how you're born in the war years.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me how that affected your family, and then how that war ultimately made your family make the decision to migrate to the United States?
Mm-hmm. Well, by 1940, various armies had already taken turns being in Latvia, but it appeared that the Russian army would be the one that would be staying, and they had a history persecuting the Latvian people by sending them to Siberia by mass killings, things of that nature. So my father especially made the decision that we needed to leave. That meant leaving everything behind. At that time, he was a veterinarian in a small town named Zasa. And this was a young family that was that had to prepare to leave in short order, and that's what we did. We decided to, my parents decided that we needed to go to Germany. And other Latvians chose to go to, let's say, Sweden or other places nearby. But nobody knew exactly where to go.
And then, was it just your immediate family, like you and your brothers? Well, how many siblings did you have?
I was the only child. My parents were newly married, and my brother was born in Germany at the end of World War II.
And then, so how old were you when you had to leave?
I was about 5 years old.
About five, okay.
So my memories are mostly of things that a small child mm-hmm. would remember. You know, you remember bits and pieces of things.
And then, did you have any schooling before you leave, or was it just very what your family taught you?
No, I had no kindergarten, nothing like that, because of the war turmoil.
Okay.
But by the time that I went to school, I already knew how to read. My parents had taught me, which really wasn't all that unusual, because even my father, who was born in 1905 in Latvia, there were years when he was unable to attend school because the country was occupied. So his parents taught him, or a tutor would come and stay. But in my case, my parents did a lot of reading to me, and I had a couple of books that I could read. And then finally, I attended, I think the first grade that I went to was, I was a second grader.
And was that in Germany?
In Germany, yes. Okay.
So then, going back to that earlier question, was it just your immediate family, just you, your mom, and your dad, or did you take some, like, cousins and grandparents?
Well, they traveled on their own.
Okay.
Their stories were similar, but yet somehow different. Even my both sets of grandparents left, but they left with, you know, other children in those families. So everybody that could, you know, bailed out, because it was very obvious that things were getting to be very drastic.
Yeah, and like you said, that so you trusted the Germans more than the Russians, per se?
I think probably, because even though the German people at that time were quite brutal to certain groups of people, yet they seem to be the better choice when compared to the Russians.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that 100%. So how long did you stay in Germany?
We stayed until 1949. We did not live in a DP camp. My dad always worked as a veterinarian. In particular, this was in a little town in Germany, taking the practice of a German veterinarian who had been accused of being a Nazi and was serving prison time at the end of the war. So by the time we left that little town to immigrate to the United States, I think I'm under the impression that he was soon to be released after serving his term.
That's wonderful to hear. And then, so you said earlier that your brother was born during this time?
My brother was born in Germany, and he was just a toddler when we came to the United States.
And you were like 13?
No. I was about 9.
About nine. Oh.
Yeah.
So then, like, what do you remember coming? Because I assume you came by a ship.
We came by a troop ship. Yeah, it was manned by American sailors, and I remember there were many languages spoken on that ship. There were many children. For some reason, I was allowed to wander around that ship pretty much, you know, and I got to know some of the crew, because I was one of the faithful people in the dining hall. Mm-hmm. There were other people who were suffering from seasickness, but never me. The eggs might be rolling on the table, but I was still having breakfast, and I think I got to know some of the kitchen crew pretty good. But one of the stories I've been just anxious to tell is something that I remembered probably about 10 years ago that happened to me. We were coming into New York Harbor, and of course everybody was excited. Most people were on the deck, but one of the sailors that I had gotten to know made a point to try to talk to me in English, and of course I knew no English. But through sign language and the few words that I knew, he took me over to the railing And he pointed to the Statue of Liberty. He wanted to make sure that I saw it. And the significance of this is that the sailor was black. He was a U.S. sailor, and he was serving in the military. And I thought nothing of it at the time. Mm-hmm. But years later, I think, my goodness, here we have a man who was oppressed at that time. He probably felt more freedom being in the military than anywhere in his own country. But he was pointing out the symbol of freedom to me.
That's especially cool, since you did mention that that sailor was black. And mm-hmm. we all know during these times when the war's gone on that they didn't have full rights. There's still a lot of discrimination in the United States at that time.
Right.
So that definitely had a lasting impact on you, I would say.
I think it did. To me, seeing a black person was kind of a curiosity more than anything. And I was never... it was never emphasized to me that there was any kind of a difference between black and white people. So, you know, he was my buddy, and he provided me with breakfast, and he paid attention to me.
So, when you were on the ship, you said there was multiple languages. Mm-hmm. So, did you learn any other languages?
We were coming over in August, and I think our whole journey was probably like... seems to me about 9 days, 9-10 days. So it wasn't that long.
Not that long. So you knew Latvian?
Mm-hmm. I had gone to a German school, so then I knew German. Okay. But that's not unusual, because those countries are rather small, and there's a lot of interaction in one way or another.
So when you're just this little girl coming and this black sailor shows you the Statue of Liberty, what was going through your head as you see this new country? It's all new to you.
Well, that kind of came the next day, because my little brother happened to get the measles while on the ship. And so we couldn't proceed to Ohio where we had sponsors and where we were going to live. And so we had to stay in New York and for a couple days until he got over the measles. And I had an aunt that already had come to America a couple years before us. And we stayed with her. And she said to me one of those days, she said, Linda, you come shopping with me. And we went into a store that, to my eyes, had everything stacked up to the ceiling. The shelves were full, everything there. And she said to me, Linda, you pick whatever you like in this store. I will get it for you. I mean, it was like Christmas 10 times over. And I thought about it for a long time. And I picked cookies, those wafer cookies that have the frosting in the middle? That's what I came up with. They were wonderful. So that was a first impression. I mean, there was plenty of everything here. Plenty. And then the other impression, still in New York City, was my dad and I, and maybe some other people were walking in the city. My aunt lived in Brooklyn, and there were lots of street vendors there. They might have a cart with something that they were selling. In this particular instance, we were up close to a cart where somebody stole a watermelon right in front of our eyes. Mm. And the owner of the cart said to my dad, who he hadn't ever met before, you watch my cart while I go chase this guy. My father couldn't get over the fact that this man left his entire inventory with a complete stranger who had just come to this country to take after this thief. only in America, really. So those were pretty powerful events at that time.
So then I take it your dad knew English pretty well when he came over to America?
Yes, he did. Most kids, not just my dad, but they were required to learn English and other languages in high school already. So, and they were, like Latvians, were never conquered by Americans, but they had been conquered by Germans and Russians, so they knew those languages too.
And then, so, I mean, you've talked about your brother. Can you say what his name was? So,
my brother's name?
Yep, your brother's name.
His name was Janis, which is the equivalent of John.
Okay.
Janis Skroms.
So then Skroms was your maiden name?
Yes.
Before you met my grandpa.
Right.
So then you said their sponsors were in Ohio. So how did that work with the sponsors system?
Well, in those days, you had to, many people that were waiting to immigrate, whether they were living outside of the displaced person camps or DP camps or in them, had to go through a lengthy process to be accepted. And one of the criteria was that you would be able to earn your living. You weren't just going to come and live in the United States and have no ability to earn a living. So you had to be sponsored, and that meant that that sponsor would be giving you a job, at least a starting job. Then it was up to you whether you would be good enough to keep it. You know, they weren't signing up to be lifetime providers for you, but our sponsor was a farmer in Ohio, southern part of Ohio. So my dad worked on that dairy farm. So that for a year.
So then after that year up was on that dairy farm, after that year was done, did you stay in Ohio or did you seek jobs elsewhere?
Well, my father had heard that there would be openings in North Dakota where they were doing a Bang's disease eradication program. So that required veterinarians that were certified in the United States to lead groups of veterinary students every summer to test all cattle for this Bang's disease, which was causing a problem in the cattle herds. So that was the reason we came to North Dakota.
And then when you guys arrived in like the United States, did you face any discrimination? Like, you've heard of other immigrants like facing that, or were you guys pretty like they were accepting kind of type of a thing?
I think overall, I think I never felt any discrimination. I don't think my parents did either. Of course, there was a culture shock, but which would be normal, but I would say if you did your job, no matter what it was, and you were a hardworking individual, you were respected for that, you know. So
your father worked as a veterinarian in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. Did your mom work, or did she just stay home and teach you and your brother?
My mom stayed home. She would answer the phone for him and do those kind of things. And later, we sponsored, since we had proven that we could take care of ourselves, were able to sponsor my grandparents, both sets. So one of them came to live, one couple, my grandma and grandpa, came to live with us. And then we were responsible for them as well, so.
And then do you remember where you lived in North Dakota when you came?
First we came to McCluskey, North Dakota. And then later, a couple of years later, I think it was, we moved to Turtle Lake, North Dakota, which was more in the center of the private practice that my dad had established.
So did your dad go out in the field most like? Did he work out of his home, or did he have a clinic in a town?
Well, initially, he went out into the countryside. Farmer would call up and say, I have a problem, and you'd try to get directions without GPS and try to find this farm and do what needed to be done. And then later, quite a bit later, my dad had a building that was like a clinic. And sometimes the farmers would bring the cattle in, but they still liked to have him come out because it was less of a problem
for them.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, and that's also where I, like in Turtle Lake, is where I went to high school.
That's what I was going to ask you next. How was your middle school years and your junior high and high school years? And like, how did those experiences mold you to the person you are today? And how are high schools are different than today?
Oh, that's quite a question.
I know, I could have broken that up
a big one. What influenced me? I think I was really very fortunate to have some good teachers. I think they sometimes made extra effort, especially in the beginning, like in junior high and grade school. I think I was a pretty decent student. And really, in those days, I think most people were more eager to learn, and they were respectful of the teachers, and I just don't remember much disruption in the classroom or acting out or any of that. I did have an eighth grade teacher who I heard would take the boys into the furnace room and whip them with something, but he never invited me there, so so I don't know. But I think overall it was a much calmer scene at the school.
That was chaotic.
And granted, this was a small town, but we all walked to school.
Yeah.
Winter, summer, no matter what time. And some kids would eat lunch. Some of us had a long enough lunch hour we'd even walk home. So
I mean, I guess my next question's gotta be, when did you learn to drive, and when did you get your driver's license?
My dad taught me. That he was a very strict teacher. That happened probably, I'm not sure exactly, but I think probably my junior year or something like that. So
you're like 16, 17 in that age range?
Yeah, by the time I went to college, I had my own wheels, so.
Yeah, your own wheels.
Yes.
What car did you drive?
I had a Ford. Don't ask me what year. I think it was a used one, but it was already I graduated from high school in 1958, so I think the Ford was probably several years previous to that. I would say high school was pretty easy. College, that all depended on the subject, because it depended on how well I was prepared for it.
And where did you go to college?
I went to UND at Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Grand Forks. What did you study there?
I ended up with a degree in occupational therapy. So I found that to be an interesting field.
Can you explain how that, like what exactly that is?
Well, it is, in general terms, it's working in rehab where you encourage and teach the person that you're working with to use whatever capability they have or hope to have. You can be working with very small infants, or you can be working with elderly people in a school setting, hospital, any settings. And you asked me earlier what influenced me in school. And one of the things was being a Girl Scout. That really had a great influence because one of our leaders was a mother who was also a nurse. Mm-hmm. And so she, I think, handled us very wisely and instilled in us the need to be of service to others.
So is that where you met Grandpa? Was that UND?
Well, he didn't go to school there. I met his sister. And he had a twin sister who was my sorority sister. So she lined us up. And, you know, eventually we kind of got interested in each other. It was not love at first sight, Paul. Anyway, so, and your grandpa and I got married in 1963.
Did you get married in Grand Forks, or what? How was life after college for you?
Oh, life after college was the same year that I graduated from college. Your grandpa and I got married, and I came to live here. And then I wanted to work, but I had to explain what I was all about and why they should hire an occupational therapist. And that field was totally unknown here. So that was a project to be handled, I guess.
So then, did Grandpa have his farm back here at this point, or was he coming over with his family and then the farm got made?
Like your grandpa?
Yeah, like...
Oh, yes. They were... your grandpa was the, let me see, third generation on this farm.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This farm is more than 100 years old.
I didn't think it was that old.
Oh, yes.
I didn't realize. I thought my dad was like a third generation. I didn't realize grandpa was. That's... Yeah. That's awesome.
No, your grandpa's grandmother homesteaded this place. This was one of the last places to be homesteaded in the United States. So.
So then you said how your field was very unknown to this area. So how did you get a job here?
Well, I had to go sell myself. and my first job was at a nursing home, where the idea that just because you're in a nursing home doesn't mean that you should just sit in a chair all day long or lie in a bed was something new. And so that was an interesting time in my life.
So do you remember where that nursing home was?
That nursing home was in Sydney, Montana, yeah.
And then was it a hospital there at this point?
There was, but they were separate. They were not affiliated as they are now.
That's awesome. I'm glad we sat down and had this conversation.
Well, I enjoyed it too, Paul.
So thank you, Grandma.
Thank you very much.